Okay, so you're tuned to Mix 93.8 and on the Rockfest. And as regular listeners, I'm sure you'll know by now that KISS will be in South Africa on the 25th of July next year. And you should all have tickets by now. I certainly got mine. So I'm thrilled to have Tommy Thayer, lead guitarist with the hottest band in the world, KISS, with me on the show tonight. Tommy, welcome to the Rockfest.
How you doing, James? Great to be on with you.
Yeah, no, we're really doing well. I've got to, obviously, we don't have a lot of time, and I think 45 years of Kiss from my, I wouldn't be on the radio if it wasn't for Kiss, I've got to be honest. So I've got a lot of things to ask you.
Please.
Yeah, so maybe you could just start. And I'm sitting here now. I've got Black and Blue, Nasty Nasty in front of me. That was an album I bought in about 1986. And that was produced by Gene Simmons. Yeah, was that how the whole relationship with Kiss started, that album?
Well, my involvement with KISS started back in the 80s, maybe even a little bit before the Black and Blue record that you talked about. Back a couple of years before that, we had just, Black and Blue, my group in the 80s, we had just finished our second record, which was called Without Love. We recorded it up in Vancouver, British Columbia, with Bruce Fairbairn producing, and a little known engineer at the time, a guy named Bob Rock,
Wow.
who, as we all know, went on to a big career as a famous rock and roll producer. But Bruce Fairbairn produced the record. We finished it, real good record. And one day, a couple weeks later, our manager, a guy named Warren Entner, called me on the phone and said, "Tommy, guess what? I've secured the opening act on the new KISS tour." And I couldn't believe it at the time. I was thrilled because, I'd always been a huge KISS fan growing up myself. And he told me that we had about 25 shows opening for KISS on their Asylum tour, which went through, November, December 1985. So that's actually when I met those guys, when we started touring as the opening act for KISS. So, I've definitely come full circle. But that was, like I said, almost 35 years ago, and that's when I first got to know the guys in KISS, Gene Simmons' family, and of course the drummer at the time was Eric Carr, and Bruce Kulick was on lead guitar. So it was just a thrill for us to tour with a band that we had idolized growing up.
I bet it was. Yeah, that's fantastic. So, yeah, I can imagine there's a lot of sort of hero worship. And did that? So that was the start of the relationship, and then that kind of led you, obviously, to getting more involved with KISS. But I was reading today you actually worked on the Jimmy Barnes album, Working Class Man, and that's another one of my favorites. And I know Geffen were expecting a lot from that album. But did you do all the lead guitar on that, Tommy?
Well, I played guitar on two or three songs on that Jimmy Barnes record. It's kind of interesting. Right around that same time when we had finished our second record, our second Black and Blue record, a guy named John Klobner, who was the A&R guru at Geffen Records at the time, he was the guy that signed this. And he signed all kinds of bands back in the day, AC/DC, Foreigner, Whitesnake, Sammy Hagar, and of course Black and Blue. Later worked with Aerosmith at Geffen Records as well. But anyway, one day Klobner called me on the phone and he said, "Hey, I've got this session I'd like you to come down and play guitar on." He's already from Australia named Jimmy Barnes. And I said, "Gosh, that's really cool. I haven't really done too many sessions before." And I didn't even know who Jimmy Barnes was at the time, which is funny. Because he wasn't that well known in the United States. So I went down to the session and I was kind of young. I was about 22, 23 years old. I felt a little out of my element. I was a little bit nervous actually. But I knew I could do it. So I took my guitar and my little amp down there and walked into the room. There was Mick Fleetwood setting up his drums and Billy Burnett, who was playing Fleetwood Mac at the time. Also the bass player and the keyboard player from Little Feat. And so I was, got my feet to the fire there and got involved in the session with Jimmy Barnes, and we recorded a few songs. And it was exciting, but again, I didn't even know who he was because he wasn't known in the U.S., but I later found out he was a huge megastar in Australia and other parts of the world.
Cold Chisel, probably one of the best bands I've ever produced, in my humble opinion. So that's fantastic. And so then I've got to ask you this as well, because then just before, I will talk about Kiss, obviously, that's the main point of the interview. But there was another little incident with a band called Shake the Faith in about 1994. And I was reading that you actually convinced Hunter S. Thompson to do the album cover for America the Violin. How on earth did you get that right?
it's just one of those funny things. Was this was in the early 90s. I had this group called Shake the Faith, like you mentioned, and it was kind of in between times. Black and Blue had ran its course, and this was really before I started working for Kiss. So it was a local band in LA, but we were making a bit of a stir there because it was a good band, and we were packing out all the local clubs, and we put out this record called America the Violin, and it was distributed in Japan. So we had seen this artwork by the writer Hunter Thompson in Playboy magazine, and it was really a dramatic piece of art where he'd take a photo, he'd take it out on the shooting range, and he'd blow holes in it with his gun, and then he'd splatter paint. And we just thought it was a cool look. So I don't know how it happened, but somehow I was able to get a hold of Hunter Thompson. He lived in Aspen, Colorado, and I sent him a letter, and he actually answered me back, which was a surprise. And then I sent him some of the music, and he ended up doing a piece of art for us for our album cover. And I couldn't believe it at the time, because he didn't know me from Adam, but I just I gave it a shot. And somehow I think I sent him a letter at the time, or maybe a fax or something. But this was before email.
Wow,
it worked out. And,
what a story.
I still got that art. It's probably worth a lot of. It's probably worth the money now.
Yeah, I bet it is. And I thought that was really interesting. You know, these little sort of details that make things so interesting in the rock business. So then you sort of went. You were part of the Kiss organization for about 8 years before you actually sort of started playing guitar for them. That must have driven you crazy. I mean, did you just sort of quit the other bands and just started working with Kiss and doing? You did Kiss 3. I think that's sort of where it started. You put that together for them.
Yeah, I was lucky because when Black and Blue ran its course, and of course I had already built an association with Gene Simmons because he produced the third and fourth Black and Blue records. So we had a relationship that was already going. And at one point he asked me if I wanted to write a couple songs with him. He was working on tunes for their new record at the time, which became Hot in the Shade. And of course I jumped on that, and I ended up with a couple co-writes with Gene on Hot in the Shade, a song called Street, Give It the Street, Take It Away. And the other one was called Betrayed.
Okay.
And it was interesting because, you know, they were just album tracks, but Betrayed ended up being the B-side of the single, which was Forever, and it was a big song. Forever was the top 10 record, and so I had the B side with Gene on Forever. And one day I didn't have any money at the time. I was struggling along, and one day I went to my mailbox and opened it, and there's a check from the publishing company for about $25,000. And I was just over the moon. I couldn't believe that I got a check for that much money, because the song Betrayed was the B side of Forever single. So that really got thinking that, man, maybe I can really make a career, make some money doing music.
Yeah, that's really something. And then
I was gonna say, so it was after that, then they ended up asking me, Gene and Paul from Kiss asked me if I would be interested in coming to work for them part time. Because they had a project that they were doing, and they needed some help. I knew a lot about Kiss, so they asked me to come over and start sorting through old photo archives and collecting photos for a copy tape that they were putting together themselves at the time called Kissery. And that's really when I started working for Kiss. It was behind the scenes to begin with, and eventually turned into a full-time job where I was going on the road and helping road manage and do different things like that, and working on producing videos and all kinds of stuff. So I just, again, I got lucky and I got involved with these guys. And of course, everything came full circle eventually by 2002. The original guitar player was on his way out for the second third time. And I was, since I happened to be there at the right time, they said, Tommy, we need to take over guitar. So it was just a natural thing. A lot of people ask, you know, did you have to audition for Kiss and how did it come together? But I was just lucky, and I was there at the right time, and they just said, hey, you know, we need you to be off stage and be our guitar player now. That was like 17, 18 years ago.
I saw something where they never actually really asked you, but there was a comment about you need to start growing your hair out, which I think is quite cryptic. But obviously, yeah, I think you got the hint. I don't want to run out of time, and I know the
song. That was kind of how it happened. Now, instead of an audition, I sat out one day, Gene Simmons and Paul Stanley. Paul Stanley's house, and all they said to me is, Tommy, you need to start growing your hair long again. So that was my cue. That was happening.
That's amazing. So obviously you guys are out here in South Africa in July next year. And so as I understand it, you started the End of the Road tour in January this year. So you're kind of about halfway, I guess, because I think the last one is scheduled for 21st of July 2021. So how's that been for you guys? How are you holding up?
Well, we're doing real well. Like you said, we've done about 100 shows this year, which is pretty aggressive schedule, actually. We started back in the end of January, as you said. So we're barely halfway on this tour, because the End of the Real World Tour is going to go until July 2021. So we've got all this year coming up, and we're going to be playing some amazing places, particularly somewhere like Johannesburg, which we've never been to.
Sure.
And this is something that we're really looking forward to. And we've always talked about trying to get down there, but it's never happened. But now it is happening. So we're excited to be there on July 25th, and we're going to bring it.
We can't wait. I mean, everybody I know has got tickets already. And like I say, we grew up on you guys, so I'm going to make no mistake, you'll get a very warm welcome. How long is the show typically? What can we expect? A couple of hours?
our show is 2 hours plus.
Okay.
And I think it's the right length. You know, of course, you don't want to play too little, but also we're not a Bruce Springsteen that plays for 3.5 hours either. Rock and roll show that's well planned, and we've got a lot of effects, as you know, and that's what's made Kiss famous over the years, the pyro and the humongous production. So, like I said, we're going to be bringing it, and we put a lot of time and preparation into this to make sure it's, you know, by far the best Kiss show that's ever been out.
And do you bring the whole show, Tommy, or do you have to scale it back for, you know, the sort of far flung places? Can we expect to see what you've sort of done on the European tour?
Yeah, we'll be bringing 100% of the show down to Johannesburg. It's you know, when we come there, we're bringing the full show, just like we're taking it everywhere else. And you know, I know the Dome is a big place there, and we're gonna pack it out with a big stage and a huge production. So no, we're bringing all the bells and whistles, full production, everything that people expect
that
show.
Oh, that's fantastic. We really, as I said, we can't wait. So then just another question I wanted to ask you. So I know Gene has pretty much said that there won't be another Kiss studio album, and his sort of rock is dead statement, that there's kind of divided opinion across the rock world. But I thought Monster was a great album, and you sang lead vocals on Out of This World. Do you sing any lead vocals on the tour?
You know, I'm not doing any lead vocals in the set right now, because the songs that I've actually sang, like you said, on Monster, and then the other one, Lightning Strikes on Sonic Bloom, unfortunately, those aren't well-known songs, and there's too many classics to play, so I'm not going to be singing one, but I do sing a lot on all the other songs, background vocals, and we all sing a lot, but as far as lead vocals would be, that's Gene and Paul and Eric, I think a couple, but... I won't be singing either of those songs on this tour, just because they're not really well known enough to be in the set.
Sure. Well, I mean, you've got such.
Thanks for the interruption. We have time for one more question.
Okay. So then, let me just ask you this, Tommy. So I know it's a year out before the final show, but have you kind of thought about what happens after when the final show is done? I guess I think it's in New York, and I'm guessing it'll be Madison Square Gardens or something like that. What happens for Tommy Thayer after Kiss?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm still just getting into the swing of this tour and enjoying what we're doing. I haven't really figured that out yet, but I will add that I am the young member of the band, so I got plenty of time ahead and years to do a lot of different things. And it still might be KISS related, certainly. KISS is not going to go away. The music and the imagery and everything will continue, hopefully, for a long time. So nice. I might just as well be involved with KISS moving forward, possibly. But I've got a lot of their other irons in the fire and things that I might be doing. But I can't tell you specifically what that is right now. We still got a lot of touring to go on this End of the Road World Tour. And like you said, we still got a year and a half to go. So that's where my head is right now.
No, that's absolutely awesome. And I'm glad to hear that. Well, I can't even imagine a life without KISS. So it's great that we'll still have them around, even if we're not having sort of tours of this scale. Tommy, thanks absolute million for being on the show. As I say, we're really looking forward to it. And looking forward to seeing you in on the 25th of July in Johannesburg. Thank you very much for being on the Rockfest.
We're looking forward. We're looking forward to being there on July 25th. I appreciate the call. It's great talking to you, James.
Lovely. Tommy, thanks very much. You keep well. Cheers.